Good afternoon, friends, and welcome to another edition of the podcast that I, your host, David Woodruff, refer to affectionately as the Woodruff Report. This is sort of a championship kind of episode. We've got a little bit of football in Champions League final. The matchup is set. Juventus of Italy will match off against Real Madrid. Two titanic Goliaths facing off in the world's biggest competition in what is sure to be an excellent matchup. Here in the States, three-fourths of the Western and Eastern Conference finals are set. There is one series that is still going on. That is the Celtics-Wizards series. Game 6 is occurring as I speak. The Celtics have a chance to close this one out in Washington. John Wall and company will do everything they can to level it at 3-3 and force the series to a Game 7. So, Champions League, Western Conference, and Eastern Conference Finals, a lot of big action coming at you. So, get ready for an excellent episode. By the way, before I start, I was kind of thinking about this cool idea for the NFL I had. Very abstract, still in the preliminary stages of thought in my mind. But what if there was a lottery to choose who your next opponent was? For example, every team that won the weekend previous would choose out of a hat. And then, based on that, they would get to choose the team that they played next. For example, if the 49ers won their week one matchup, they would draw out of the hat, and then half of the teams, or all the teams that won the previous week in the NFL, would draw numbers. So, seeing as there are 32 teams in the NFL, 16 teams would choose out of a hat, numbers from 1 to 16, and say the 49ers picked a 1 out of the hat, they would have the first choice as to who they play the next week. So they would say, oh, I want to play the Cleveland Browns next week. I don't know. This it kind of seems stupid telling this idea to you guys right now, but I was thinking about it and I thought it would be kind of interesting. And another way for the NFL to get ratings, I mean, if they can get that many people to watch the Combine and actually sell tickets for people to watch the Combine, then they could call this like the competition ceremony, get more viewers. Good for the NFL. Not really good for anyone else, but doesn't seem to matter. Roasted. But anyway, just an idea I had. Competition show where the winners of last week get to choose their next opponent. Maybe one of my worst ideas. If I was to rate it, I'd probably give it a 3 out of 10. But anyway, we've got a great show coming your way. We've got soccer, basketball. It's going to be exciting. I'm excited. You should be too. This is the Woodruff Report. I'm your host, David Woodruff. Let's get chugging in 3, 2, 1. As I stated in the introduction, 3/4, 75% of the conference finals are set. In the East, we have the Cavaliers playing against the winner of the Celtics Wizards series, which is occurring as I speak. In the West, the matchup is set, and it's a good one. Spurs-Warriors in what's going to turn out to be a great matchup. So let's talk about the West, just because the series is set. It will be Warriors-Spurs. The Warriors swept the Jazz, and none of the games were that close. They closed it out in Utah, both games, playing stifling defense and just doing enough offensively. They did not look great offensively in Utah, but they got the job done. And Utah, of course, is one of the best defensive teams in the league, and you've got the home crowd factor. So I think the Warriors can be excused for their performances offensively in games 3 and 4. But the Spurs-Rockets series was a lot more interesting. The Spurs took a 3-2 series lead after winning Game 5. And what a Game 5 it was as the game went into overtime. The Spurs, minus Kawhi Leonard, who picked up an ankle injury, were able to hold off the Rockets. For Houston, James Harden poured in 33, but he did not score in overtime. And it really showed because the offense was sorely lacking in overtime, really from both teams. The overtime was just kind of a slog. No one was putting the ball in the bucket. The Spurs somehow managed to win after going the first 6 minutes of the overtime period without scoring. Ryan Anderson supplemented James Harden's 33 with 19 of his own. Patrick Beverley poured in 20, but not very many people played for the Rockets in this game, and a ton of people had to play high minutes. I mean, they pretty much had an 8-man rotation going in. So the bench never was great in Houston, and it showed here as the game got longer, the play got sloppy, and the Rockets could not find points when Harden couldn't put the ball in the basket. But on the flip side, the Spurs, minus Kawhi, as I stated previously, managed to slog their way and just get by. The Spurs had a strategy that was like the opposite of the Rockets, in that they played a lot of people and had much more rotation. This was, of course, a better strategy for them because their best player was out, unlike Houston, who James Harden was fine, so they want the ball in his hands. But the Spurs were forced to play a lot of people and get points from a variety of sources. So Kawhi did have 22 before he went down, but Patty Mills came off the bench and put in 20. LaMarcus Aldridge had a good night. He poured in 18. And Danny Green also had a good night off the bench with 16 points, including 7 in the slog of overtime period. So the Spurs took a 3-2 lead, but going to Houston for Game 6 without Kawhi is going to be a very difficult thing to do. The interesting thing was that even with all the problems that the Spurs were facing, Houston still had all the pressure on them. With the game in Houston, with the better roster, really, the better players, they were expected to win this game, and that leads to the whole James Harden situation. He only scored 10 points in Game 6. You've probably heard by now he did not look like himself. He kind of looked like he forgot how to play basketball. It would be like if me, your host, David Woodruff, just became James Harden 5 minutes before game time and suddenly had to lead the Rockets. And I'm just like, okay, I don't really know how to play basketball. That's what he looked like on the floor. Bad passes. He looked like the stage was too big for him. The lights were too bright. Passing up shots to throw the ball out of bounds. Missing drives. Just missing clear layups. Sloppy passes. All of the above. And the media are really tearing James Harden apart right now, and it's too bad because he really did have a great season, and it's going to be tainted by this awful performance. But there were other factors besides Harden that led to the blowout. I mean, this game was not close. The Spurs almost won by 40 points, 114-75. That potent Rockets offense just probably had their worst night of the season by far. So let's get into the statistics. For the winning Spurs, LaMarcus Aldridge carried the team with 34 points. Jonathan Simmons had 18. He played a very limited role for the Spurs during the season, but he's been forced into big minutes, especially in games 5 and 6 with all the injuries, or with the major injury, the one, that the Spurs have had to deal with. Patty Mills had 14, and the Spurs got enough scoring from their usual band of people who you haven't really heard of, international players, and had more than enough to win this game easily. On the Rockets side of the ball, you probably couldn't name a player who had a good game. Trevor Ariza had 20 points. Clint Capella had 15. Ryan Anderson, the potent three-point shooter who'd been so good for the Rockets down the stretch during the season, did not score a single point. James Harden only had 10. It was a sad way to end a very positive season in Houston, and they're still going to be good next year. I mean, they'll be good for as long as James Harden is in his prime, which he is right now. But this performance really brings up the fact that James Harden has not performed well in primetime ever in his career. When he was back in Oklahoma City, when they did make that one finals and they played LeBron, James, and the Heat, James Harden had performances similar to the ones that he put in yesterday. And it sort of makes you wonder, is this man, is there something that is hindering him in clutch situations? Is there something about his play that backs down when the spotlight is on him? Or are these two bad examples? Is our sample size too small to really tell how good James Harden is in primetime? Because during the regular season, he's very good in the fourth quarter. He can put the ball in the basket. But in the playoffs, he's proven that he cannot. So, Spurs win this series 4-2. They will face the Warriors in what looks to be a very good matchup for Golden State. I mean, it's hard to name a team that matches up favorably against the Warriors, but with the Spurs and injured Kawhi, Kawhi's their best player by far. So, even if he's 90% of what he normally is, the Spurs needed Kawhi. To win this series, the Spurs need Kawhi to be like 110% better than he usually is. And if he's hindered at all by this ankle injury, they're in trouble. Because he can lock. Kawhi has proven to be able to lock a player down. He's one of the best defenders in the league. But when you have four legitimate scoring options who can put in 20, 25 a night, you need that and some more. And if Kawhi doesn't even have that, it does not look like the Spurs will be able to compete for very long against this Warriors team. Again, this is what many people were saying when the Spurs went into Game 6 in Houston without Kawhi completely, but I certainly cannot see the Spurs winning this series at all. Right now, I believe that the Warriors will win this series in 5 games. That is the Woodruff Report's wonderful look into the crystal ball. And unless something crazy happens, like Kawhi is back, he turns out to actually be a robot and has healing powers, this series will end in 5 games. The Spurs have a lot of depth. They have good players coming off the bench, but in the Western Conference Finals against one of the best teams ever constructed in the Warriors, lots of scoring options and 10 points from a lot of people is not going to do the job. So let's move to the East, where the Cavs easily swept the Raptors and moved on to the finals. The Cavs, similarly to the Warriors, have not lost a game yet in these playoffs, but that series is uninteresting to me. I want to talk about this Celtics-Wizards series, which has been the best so far of these semifinal series. So, Boston took Game 5 after a dismal performance, especially on the defensive side of the ball, from Washington. Despite 21 from John Wall and 16 from Bradley Beal, that was never enough to even compete with the offensive fire booming explosiveness that the Celtics were able to put up in this game. The Wizards looked very tired, and as has been proven in this series, when Bradley Beal and John Wall do not go absolutely off, the Wizards do not win. So, when they combined for less than 40 points, you know that the Wizards are probably going to lose the game, and an L they did take. As the great Stephen A. Smith said, Avery Bradley looked like Michael Jordan. He put in 29. Isaiah Thomas had 18. Jay Crowder also had 18. So lots of scoring from lots of people, and this allowed the Celtics to take Game 5 in a cakewalk. So they lead this series 3-2. Game 6 is occurring as I speak. Last time I checked, the Wizards were up 6, 36-30. Of course, it's only in the second quarter, so we will definitely talk about this next week on the Woodruff Report about the Western Conference semifinals. We will talk a little bit about the new series because they will have started by then. So that's your NBA update, playoff update. Spurs are officially into the finals to face the Warriors, and the Cavs are awaiting the winner of the Celtics-Wizards series. So, let's transition and talk about some Champions League football. We haven't talked about football in a while, and it's two big European powers who find themselves in a Champions League final. Real Madrid, last year's winners, find themselves in again after disposing of Atletico Madrid. Juventus, after a year missing out on the final, are now back in it again. So two teams who make it a lot know what it's like to be in the world, the club world's biggest stage, know what it's like, and two very good rosters competing for the Champions League trophy. So how did they get here? Juventus beat Monaco, and as I stated before, Real Madrid beat city rivals Atletico Madrid. So let's start in the Madrid derby, which also functioned as the semifinals. So in the first leg of this game, in the Santiago Bernabeu, behind a hat trick from Cristiano Ronaldo, Real Madrid was able to easily take a 3-0 lead on aggregate, and this was domination in every form. They had 60%+ of possession. They had way more shots. Atletico only had one shot on target the whole game. And Real Madrid had fresh legs. They'd rested some players during their weekend clash. And it looked like it. Ronaldo, just his usual self, active up front, getting in good positions and being rewarded with three goals. The midfield was very good. Modric played very, very well. So let's talk about their goals. The first goal of the match took place when a Sergio Ramos cross was headed out of the box right to Rafael Varane, who kind of volleyed it. He did not hit it very well. It went straight into the ground, but functioned as a perfect cross for Cristiano Ronaldo, who headed it in after it took a big bounce off the ground, looping through the air. Ronaldo had instinctually made that front post run, and he was able to just powerfully head it past Oblak, who stood no chance. Atletico had a very good chance to equalize as Gamero was sent in on goal, but Keylor Navas, he's been criticized a lot by that ruthless Madrid media, came up with a big save. Gamero tried to take the ball around the keeper, but Navas stuck out his right hand, taking it under. Gamero took a lavish dive. Didn't claim penalty, but hoping the ref might be tempted to point to the spot after his crazy dive. He didn't really dive. He did actually trip, so I may be unfairly criticizing him, but he did sort of go flying and corkscrewing through the air after not much contact. So the second goal was more of the same from Real. A well-worked attack ended up with Benzema playing the ball over to Ronaldo. Ronaldo was aided by a fortunate deflection, which looped the ball right into the air in towards his feet, but he finished well, dispatching it with a volley right into the top left corner to make it 2-0 to Real. And then Ronaldo finished his hat trick after a lovely Real Madrid counterattack. The ball was eventually cut back to him, and about on the penalty spot, he dispatched of it right past Oblak to make it 3-0. Oblak stood no chance. He actually played very well in this game. He had one terrific save off a corner kick. I cannot quite remember the exact person who headed it from Real Madrid, but Oblak with a nice fingertip save. But he still was, he could not quell the avalanche that was Real Madrid. So 3-0 on aggregate after the first leg, and the tie did seem to be over with the second leg still to play across town in Atletico. So leg two actually started out very, very promisingly. Not sure if that's a, yeah, that's a word. Started out very promisingly for Atletico. They scored a quick goal off a corner, Saul heading the ball near post after a good delivery to make it 1-0. And then Fernando Torres was tripped in the box by Varane, a penalty to Atletico, with which Antoine Griezmann, luckily, he scuffed it, one of the worst penalties I've ever seen, but it just took a fortunate hop over Navas to make it 2-0 Atletico, and we're not even 20 minutes into the game. But Atletico was never able to capitalize on their strong start, and the tie was put away when Benzema had a beautiful piece of skill by the Atletico end line, dribbling past three players, cutting the ball back. The ball was shot, saved by Oblak, but Isco was on hand to put in the rebound to make it 2-1. And that was enough for Atletico to secure, for Real to secure a place in the final, 4-2 on aggregate, and they will play in their second consecutive Champions League final. But they will not be facing Atletico this year. They will be facing Juventus. So, how did Juventus get there? They did it behind a resolute defense and some great performances, especially by Dani Alves. So, first leg in Monaco, in France, two goals by Higuain were enough to do the trick. And the first one was probably the goal of the Champions League semifinal. One of the just a terrific goal. The ball was played up the field. A beautiful back heel flick finds Alves, who takes the ball from about midfield to the edge of the 18-yard box, back heels it to Gonzalo Higuain, who dispatches it into the bottom left corner. 1-0 Juventus and a precious away goal. In the second half, the Juventus solidified their place in the final by scoring a second away goal. Dani Alves stole the ball high up the field and floated in a perfect cross to the back post to Higuain, who slid it home with his left foot past the Monaco keeper. 2-0, two away goals to take back to Juventus, and behind that strong defense of Bonucci, Chiellini, Alves, and company, Monaco didn't have very many chances. The two good chances that Monaco had in this match, one came very early. A beautiful cross was played in, and Mbappe flicked it with his left foot on target, but Buffon was positioned to make a relatively easy save. The second one was a ball played in to Rafael Falcao, but he never got enough on the shot, kind of a weak strike that ended up going right at Buffon, and it takes something special to beat Buffon, who's playing. He seems to get better as each year passes. So 2-0 for Juventus, and a lead to take back to Turin. And early in the second leg, they ended the tie. That man, Dani Alves, again, swinging a beautiful cross in from the right side to the back post. The ball was headed by Mario Mandzukic right at the keeper, but with enough pace that the keeper wasn't able to handle the ball, and Mandzukic was able to dispatch the rebound into the net. Now 3-0 on aggregate with the two away goals, so Monaco had to score four unanswered, which they were never going to do. And then a worldly. Dani Alves, he was just incredible in this tie. Ball comes in on a corner kick, punched out by the Monaco keeper way into the air, and then from outside the area, Dani Alves hits a first-time volley into the net. I don't have words to describe how beautiful this goal was. It's definitely one to watch. Dani Alves played fantastic in both legs, and he made it 2-0 Juventus, tie over. Second half was a formality at this point. Monaco was able to get a goal back and at least give their home supporters, or their supporters who traveled all the way to Italy, something to cheer about after, on a corner kick, Mbappe punched home the ball after the ball was dribbled down the Juventus end line, kind of just hit into the scrum in the middle, and Mbappe just turned it home. So a goal for the young Monaco star. Something to treasure for him, and a goal for Monaco to celebrate, but they were not as good as Juventus was. Juventus was sort of the perfect poison to counter Monaco. Monaco has that extremely strong offense. They can score with anybody, but Juventus had a better defense on this night. So Juventus proceeds 4-1 on aggregate and will face Real Madrid in the final. So, if we look into the Woodruff crystal ball, who do we see winning this Champions League final? Well, the answer to that is Real Madrid, who look to win consecutive back-to-back Champions Leagues. And the reason that I say that is because the Real Madrid midfield is just better and deeper than the Juventus midfield. You've got Modric, you've got Toni Kroos, You've got James and Isco coming off the bench. You have so many good players in that midfield, and Juventus does have a good target man and a very good defense, but the middle is not, it's not as good as it was when Pogba was still in town. So that's going to be where Real Madrid is able to take control of the game, and with that strong offense of whether it be Benzema or Morata up top, you've got, of course, Ronaldo and Bale, if he's healthy. You've got so much talent attacking for Real that you definitely can see them putting one or two past Gigi Buffon. And I think that the Real Madrid backline will have enough. Ramos, Varane, Marcelo will be good enough to keep Higuain out of the goal. So I believe that this final will end 2-1. After Real Madrid goes 2-0 up, Higuain will pull one back for Juventus, but it will ultimately not be enough, and Real Madrid will win back-to-back Champions Leagues. So that's our show for this week. I've been your host, David Woodruff. Thanks for listening. I kind of floated a weird idea to you about NFL teams choosing their next opponent. As I said before, I gave that idea a 3 out of 10. Not one of my best. Then we talked about the playoffs. The conference finals are nearly set. And we finished by talking about the Champions League semifinals and who is in the final. And we predicted Real Madrid would win. So, again, thanks for tuning in. This has been David Woodruff. I hope to see you next week on another edition of the Woodruff Report. Thank you.